I don't think I've had a single moment where I think I'm, you know, it's going to be amazing. I think it's really been like just plowing through and keep getting up every day and trying.
Welcome back to a brand new series of 40 Minute Mentor, your pocket-sized mentor on a mission to inspire the next generation of category-defining founders. From purpose-led entrepreneurs to world-class investors and even Olympic gold medalists, you'll learn firsthand from today's successful leaders on what it takes to be brilliant, all in just 40 minutes. Today, we're joined by the brilliant Lottie White, co-founder and CEO of MyoMaster, the home of sports recovery and a brand on a mission to unlock every athlete's greatest performance. If you're an avid Dragon's Den watcher, then you'll have seen Lottie and her co-founder husband, Joe, on the most recent series, where she won an incredible £100,000 investment from Gary Neville and Sara Davies. But this is just a latest milestone in a very impressive entrepreneurial journey, which started in Lottie's kitchen back in 2021. I can't wait to dig into Lottie's entrepreneurial journey, hear a bit more about what it's like to be on Dragon's Den, and hear what the future holds for MyoMaster. Lottie, welcome to 40 Minute Mentor. It's a real pleasure to have you here. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good. I'm riding the high of Dragon's Den right now, so I feel invincible.
Oh, I love that. I watched it with my wife and we were cheering you on, and we're going to talk a lot about that in a bit. But before we do, let's kick you off with some warm-up questions, quick-fire questions. So please finish these sentences after me. Number one, the most memorable day in my career was when?
Getting headhunted to join the board of MC's Archie.
Yeah. Amazing. Not many people can say that. One word others would use to describe me is?
Driven.
I can tell. Love it. Love it. My biggest failure to date is?
Probably setting up a big shop in Westfield when we started MyoMaster and spunking a lot of cash that nearly killed the business.
Okay. Maybe that's something we'll come back to, because that's a really good one. I measure success by?
Like a calm nervous system. Like, how happy and calm do I feel? That means everything's going all right.
And that is not always the case with entrepreneurial life. And if there was one thing I could change about entrepreneurship, it would be?
Access to cash.
I am really looking forward to this. I have been listening to other podcasts you've been on, watching videos, and I think your story is so inspiring. But before we dig into all things MyoMaster, I want to start at the beginning. Do you mind telling us a bit about your upbringing? Where did this entrepreneurial spirit come from?
Yeah, so my dad's from Jamaica, first generation immigrant, and my mum is Irish. And I grew up in South London, and my dad's a hustler, a proper hustler, but like no education, nothing. Right. And so is my mum, like the hardest working people you'll possibly meet. My mum still has two jobs. She goes to work in the day, then she goes to another job in the evening.
Amazing.
And I grew up, had an amazing childhood, got a brother, like really amazing family unit. And then I went to military school when I was 11. And that was really kind of fundamental in shaping my sort of, drive.
Yeah.
Very regimented, a lot, like they ring a bell to wake you up at 6 a.m, you do chores, you march to breakfast, you do like, I don't know, 12, 13 hours of sport every week. Like, it was very intense, silent prep for 2 hours every night, like a proper military environment. Yeah, Sunday, like cross country, even if it's snowing, doesn't matter. Wow. And so I think like that teaches you discipline, routine. And also my parents, I think they didn't have a lot and they were determined that my brother and I were going to be successful. So they were really sort of disciplined about making us have great habits and take our schoolwork seriously and all of those things.
Yeah, you know, it is so familiar, because my parents are teachers and they purposely went into private education so we could get into private school. Mm-hmm. And I went to a charity school called Christ Hospital, which is the most unique, diverse place ever. But so much of that rings true, you know. Sport all day, every day, up early doors, silent prep, marching to lunch.
Yeah.
It rings a lot of bells. Wow. So that's really cool. And you can definitely see how that has sort of, created that drive in you. Before you started MyoMaster, you had a very successful career in all things PR and advertising, which you alluded to. You're on the board of M&C Saatchi at a really young age, which is unbelievable. I know you initially started the business as a side hustle from that world. So, and I guess that's a common story for entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
But do you mind sharing kind of a bit about that time of your career and why you started it as a side hustle and how you actually balance those two things?
Yeah, well, I I had this vision when I started working. I was like, I'm going to be on the board of a big agency before I'm 30. And I was just like, that's what I'm doing. I'm not entirely sure why that was my goal, but it felt like that was the thing. And so I was over the moon when I got headhunted to join Embassy Saatchi. It was like my dream. It'd been on the vision board. It came into reality. But I got there and it was the most toxic and difficult environment to be in. And it was really this kind of like boys upstairs culture. You know, they were built in the 80s. They literally used to call the bosses the boys upstairs. Like that's how they talked about them. And it was just this culture that I didn't enjoy. And it's sort of one of those things where you've worked so hard for something, you've dreamt of it, you achieve it, and it's nothing like you imagined it would be.
It's gutting.
Yeah, so that's kind of when I sort of started thinking about like doing something for myself, creating my own environment, being my own boss, having freedom, all of those things. And it made sense to me to do it on the side and to try. And I think it's a really good piece of advice for anyone who wants to start their own business is if you can, always keep your job and keep doing it on the side, because A, you'll find out if you like it enough to make time for it. B, you can find out if you've got product market fit before you actually quit your job. And three, it takes away the pressure because you're not like having to sell product because you've got to pay your mortgage or whatever it is.
So
like
true.
It gave me the space to do it in the way that I wanted to do it because I didn't have the financial pressure of, you know, all the things if you're just doing that, doing your business.
I love that. I wonder how many amazing businesses were created off the back of a bad experience or a bad boss or a toxic environment. There's definitely bits of my prior career that I was just like, God, I never want to work in that setup again.
Exactly.
And I think that's why I always am like, I don't think I can ever work for anyone again.
Yeah.
So hence this has
to
work.
I think we've become unemployable now, right? Like, 100%. I don't know who could be my boss now.
It's so true. No, that's really interesting. I guess when you took that leap, you weren't just a full-time founder. You were also a recent mum.
Yeah.
Which is like a double whammy of like incredible, intense, exhausting things all at the same time. So how did you navigate such a like hectic time?
With a lot of tears and a good husband.
Oh, that's important. Shout out to your husband,
Shout
Jake.
Out to the people holding it all together behind the scenes. No, I think like I'm someone who likes to go at a million miles an hour. I always say this. I think it's really important to know yourself, like when you have a child, because it changes your whole entire world, but you have to know what you really want. So for me, like sacrificing my maternity leave, it was difficult, but it was so aligned with who I am. Like I was never going to be the mum that was going to stay at home for a year. Like just wouldn't have made me happy. So it was a really difficult time, but I think it's again, like the making of the business because you become efficient. You're like, I don't have time to waste. I don't have money to waste. Like, and also when you have a kid, I think you get so, have you got children?
I do have an 8-year-old daughter.
Yes. You get so much purpose, right?
100%.
You're like, I'm doing this for you. So it was a really transformative time.
It's really inspiring and a really important message I think to share. Cause I think there's still those kind of archetypal stereotypes of what being a mum should be like, when to have a career, when to start a business, all that sort of stuff. And it's actually, that's just not the case. There are so many examples of people doing it in their own way and it's what works best for them and their family. And I think you're 100% right. When Sienna came along, it totally changed my life in amazing ways, but it did focus my mind. Like it was like, I have to make this more than ever, not just because I don't want another boss, but I have to create something that one, she'll be proud of, two, that sets up our family for life.
Exactly.
But actually it's that focus of, I want to get back. And this took me, I'll be honest, this took me a few years to get to the point where I realized how much I was missing. It was really the pandemic. And now I'm like, I do the school runs 3 days a week. I am there for, I see her almost every day when I used to see her only at weekends.
Right.
And it has made the biggest difference to my happiness and also to me as a founder, I think, because I'm much more efficient. So I'm really glad you said that. We've got to talk about MyoMaster. For anyone that hasn't come across the business or saw you on Dragon's Den, which we will talk about in a minute, do you mind giving us your elevator pitch for the business and tell us a bit more about like who your perfect customer is?
Yeah, so at MyoMaster, we're building the home of physical optimization, and it's all about creating products that help you get the most out of every single day. And it's a really important mission for me and for Joe, my co-founder slash husband, because that's who we are. Like we are, you know, people in our 30s with kids, with busy careers, and we really are ambitious and we want to make the most of everything. We want to be great parents, we want to be great at work, we want to be fit and healthy and have longevity in our lives. So our perfect customer is anybody that fits in that bracket, you know, is someone who wakes up every morning and has the drive to just make the most of every day and be the best at everything that they're doing. And we create products that help them to do that.
Love that. Love that. And do you remember that moment where you realised there is serious potential in this business?
It's really funny you should say that, because actually on the way here, I was like writing a LinkedIn post about the fact we're just about to do our first £1 million quarter, which feels like a big moment for the business.
Amazing. Congrats.
And I think there were so many moments in the last couple of years where I just couldn't see the wood for the trees. Mm. And I think that happens a lot in your early stages of entrepreneurship. And not a lot of these stories get told. So I think most of the stories that get told are the Gymsharks of this world, where like it just went like that. Yeah. But I think most people's businesses don't happen like that. And actually it's a bit more slow and steady. And so I think I don't think I've had a single moment where I think, you know, it's going to be amazing. I think it's really been like just plowing through continuously and keep getting up every day and trying. And it's grown sort of slowly.
And that resilience and drive is like often the most important trait in a founder to kind of push through when others say you can't, or, you know, it feels too difficult. And clearly you've done that. I guess for anyone that doesn't know the origin story of it, we should probably do that now, actually, because it's a really unique one and very intrinsically linked to sport and all that. So do you mind sharing a bit about how it all came to be?
Yeah, so Joe, my husband, was playing at Harlequins at the time, and he was constantly getting injured. Like he said, 12 operations or something ridiculous in his career. And he was out with Achilles tendonitis, was supposed to be fit in my kitchen, was not doing as he was told, put a stool end on the end of a drill, being new drill. Started treating it on his calf and using it as a massager, because he'd had this really expensive treatment in central London that Harlequins had sent him for, but was like crazy out of any normal person's budget. And so he was trying to mimic the effects of the treatment that he'd had with this drill. He takes it into Harlequins. All the boys like literally laugh him out the room, taking the piss out of him. Like, we've got elite physios down the corridor. You don't need to be bringing in your B&Q drill. Anyway, he leaves it in the changing room. As he's coming back from treatment, he just hears like the sound of the drill in the changing room. Gets in there, all the boys are using it. If you follow rugby, Carl Sinclair was like, "Graze out, here's 200 quid, like I need this, it feels amazing on my back." Got like 7 orders, went back to B&Q, bought more drills, and then the word like sort of spread and all the other boys at the clubs were using it, and England were using it. And so that was the genesis. And Joe always says that like, if it had been left to him, he'd still be selling B&Q drills, or like it would have been forgotten. But I was also training every day, had just run a marathon, and it ruined my foot, I couldn't walk properly. And so we started using it on my foot. And then we started thinking about like, if you have access to all this elite product and elite treatment as an elite level athlete, but what does it mean for the everyday person? Like, how does the everyday person take care of their body? And so I think it's evolved now from sport into like this kind of physical optimization piece. But that was its genesis.
Really cool. And you've been on an amazing ride. You've created this 7-figure business. You're having record quarters. I mean, huge congratulations. So many successes. And yet, I know there will be tons of trials and tribulations. And we've already mentioned that, you know, often these podcasts are about all the good stuff. But I want to focus on some of the harder parts of the journey. So what have those tough bits been for you? Any like really important lessons that you've learned as a founder that you'd like to pass on to any aspiring founders listening?
Yeah, I think the point you made about resilience is kind of everything. Mm. I've had this conversation a lot with different founders, some who are kind of a million miles ahead of us, people who've sold their businesses. And really, I really think it comes down to not quitting.
Yeah.
Like, I think that is the fundamental thing, because even if your business, even if your idea doesn't start out right, I think you can continually pivot until you get it right. And I think the winners of the game are the people who don't give up, really. So not true. The people necessarily with the best ideas or the most amount of money. And I fail every week, like, and I'm not exaggerating. Mm. And I think at the beginning, the failures really hurt. So I remember raising our first round of investment. I pitched over 150 people and 147 of them told me to get lost.
Wow.
And like getting up and doing that every day is really hard. And people are telling you like they did on Dragon's Den, it's saturated, you're not doing anything different, blah, 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 blah. But what I've really learned is that failure is just part of the process. Mm. We should totally reframe it in our mind. Like, you have to fail to do this journey. It's just 100%. It's just part of what you do. And now if I get rejected, I'm like, well, on to the next one.
That's so good. And that's, I think for any early stage founders listening, it takes a bit of time sometimes to kind of get used to that. But it's a really important thing. The quicker you can get over the knocks, the better, really, isn't it? So you can just kind of keep plowing ahead. And it's a good segue to fundraising, actually. You alluded to that. And I didn't realize that's really good for people to hear, I think, how many knockbacks, how many rejections you get. But you persevered. I know you don't believe that the VC route is for everyone, which is something that we've been talking a lot on this podcast, particularly given the macro climate. So I'd love to understand a bit about your approach to fundraising, how it's gone, any learnings from doing it over the last few years.
Yeah, and my approach is that I think actually we should flip the switch on the VC world, in which we need to understand that actually very few companies are relevant for VCs. I sort of think we get fed a narrative as entrepreneurs that getting your big round raised by a VC is the win.
Yeah.
It's really not. And it is only right for companies that can 10x the return. You have to understand that. I'm not building a company that will 10x the return, and I'm not embarrassed to say that. I want to get £60 million of revenue. That's our big goal. And it's not right for VCs, and that's totally cool. So we've raised all of our money from angels. Nice. Neither Joe or I have a wealthy family or anything, but our first investment was from my former boss, and we went to people that, you know, connections that you make along the way. And I think people should consider angels. I really, really do.
100%.
They're amazing. They often leave your business alone. There's a lot less at stake for them because they're often, you know, they've got their own careers, they've got other money. Whereas for VCs, this is their career, managing you and making sure you get output. So I think you also need to understand that. And then I think in terms of the learnings, it's get comfortable with rejection and don't be embarrassed about that. It's totally fine. And secondly, you've really got to manage a fundraising process very efficiently, and you should approach it efficiently.
Yeah.
Things like having a deal room and all your documents in the right place, knowing exactly your valuation, having everything together puts you a million miles ahead when you go and have conversations with people. I think it really impresses people.
For sure.
And being kind of rigorous about the process is really important.
It's a great piece of advice. And actually, again, perfectly leads us into Dragon's Den, because I'm sure from your pitch that you had all of that very much locked down. And it's one of those incredible shows that has just, you know, I think it's got a whole new group of, you know, a big section of society have been interested in entrepreneurship and business as a result of it. So such a cool thing to be a part of, and very competitive. And you've had tons of positive responses and press off the back of your performance. Let's start at the beginning though. Why Dragon's Den? Why now? And what was the whole process like to apply and get onto the show?
Really weirdly, at the start of last year, I do my vision board at the start of every year. And I put on it two things. I put on it Dragon's Den and Google. And I actually didn't get around to applying for Dragon's Den. And the producers got in touch with me. Got a phone call in April to say, we'd love to consider you for the show. Would you be interested?
Nice.
Which I think is the power of manifestation. and then we went through a little bit of due diligence. I think if we'd have done it any earlier, it wouldn't have been the right time for the business. And I'm really glad we went on there at a time where we didn't actually need the money.
Yeah.
I think that's really important, because I've learned this through fundraising. There will be times when you're desperate for the cash. That's just the reality of starting a business. But I think if you go on that kind of platform and you're desperate for the investment, I think it comes across.
So true.
And so for us, we were willing to walk away without having an offer, although we wanted one. And the process is wild. So we were in there for 3.5 hours. Obviously you saw 10 minutes of it. Literally you have to stand on an X. You can't drink or go to the toilet or anything. And you literally get grilled by, I think there were 6 people in there when we went in there, for 3.5 hours. Like every aspect of your business, you can't check any numbers. You have to remember absolutely everything. You're just like,
wow.
And so that's why I cried at the end, because I was like just so exhausted from answering all these questions. And obviously it's like, their job is to make a TV show. So that's the other thing you have to remember before you go in there. Like, they are going to try and tear you apart, because it's like the X Factor of business. That's what they're trying to do. But for us, the exposure has been unbelievable.
Yeah.
We really have benefited from
it. It's super. I mean, it's a really smart way to get your product out in front of a whole new audience, particularly when you get funded. I mean, it's just such a cool thing to do. Was there anything really surprising about it? Did you know what to expect? Did you know that it was going to be 3.5 hours, being absolutely grilled on the spot? Or did you go into it kind of fairly like, just ready for anything?
In terms of like the 3 hours thing, I definitely was not prepared for that. I wouldn't have worn like 5-inch heels if I don't know. But preparing for it, I mean, I prepared extremely rigorously. And I think this is a key tip for anyone doing anything in terms of fundraising or any pitch or any presentation. I literally locked myself in a room for 48 hours, and watch Dragon's Den reruns like over and over and over. Mm. Like every single question they asked, I would prepare my answer for it.
Love that.
And I think you can't over-prepare for situations like that. You can't over-prepare for a pitch, and it is what helps you to stand out. And I think that's why we sort of came across quite well, because I literally had an answer for everything.
That's amazing. Yeah, you absolutely nailed it. And you handled very intense questioning, which some people will crumble under the pressure. But I think because you were so well-prepared and really, you know, clearly know your stuff, it just had an even bigger impact. Have you got any tips for anyone that might be pitching at the moment, or maybe in the future will go on Dragon's Den, alongside being really well prepared? Is there anything about actually the way you present, the way you communicate, that you think would resonate with our audience?
I think it's really important to be humble on those kind of things, because the British public hate people who are big-headed or come across as arrogant. So it was trying to like demonstrate and back yourself without coming across as though, you know, you're sort of big cheese.
Like, yeah, it's tricky.
It is really hard. I think, knowing all your figures, but also like not being afraid to, they don't necessarily know more about your business just because they've been in business for a long time. No one knows more about your business than you do. So remember that. And that was kind of the thing with Stephen Bartlett telling me about like who our customer is. I'm like, you don't know my customer better than I do.
That's, you got some grief for that.
Yeah. I felt a bit bad because he was actually really nice to me. But I think just going in there with the confidence, it's your brand, it's your business. No one knows it better than you.
Yeah, back yourself.
Yeah, back yourself, exactly.
Love that. And you got Sara Davies, Gary Neville, hero, football legend, and amazing entrepreneur. They're both invested. Did you have anyone specific in mind when you went in there? And how has that kind of part, how have those partnerships evolved since?
Yeah, so Gary, we knew they actually changed our week. We were supposed to be filming the week before with Emma Greedy, which I was gutted about because she's my all-time incredible entrepreneurial icon. South London, mixed race. I'm like, she's my girl.
Yeah.
But we moved to we moved the next week, I think, because we were a sports brand and they thought we would align with Gary. So we always had Gary in mind. And then Sara, I totally hadn't really thought about before we went in the den. But when I was in there, she kind of blew me away. And since, she is phenomenal.
Really?
I've never met anyone with a work rate like hers. She goes and goes and goes and goes. Like it's incredible. And also what she's built is exactly what we're trying to build in a different space.
Yeah.
So having that person who, she started at a kitchen table with her husband, I don't know, 20 years ago now. They built like a £50 million business in exactly the way we want to. So yeah, she's...
That's really cool. Yeah, because I hadn't really heard of her until... Yeah. At Dragon's Den, and then you're like, wow, you have done so, and she's really young still as well. It's exactly. Like incredible. Sounds like a great collaboration. Love that. I saw your LinkedIn post the other day, and you've had some mad coverage and traction. 180,000 website views, 10,000 messages, 50 million views on the clips on social media. I mean, I'd imagine in your wildest dreams you wouldn't imagine how much of an impact that's had. And would love just to hear a bit about the feedback you've had. How has that been to have kind of had such a response, and have you already started to see the kind of uptick in sales off the back of it?
We like hired a cinema to watch the thing, because I'm a big believer in like that. Celebrating the moments. But also we hadn't seen it before it came out, so we're watching it for the first time with everyone. And if you're in somewhere for 3 hours, you're very much reliant on the editors, like they can edit it however they want to.
True.
And so we were watching it, and actually after we watched it the first time, I was really annoyed because I thought it really didn't show the products in a great light, blah, blah, blah. And we went to sleep anyway, we woke up and like, obviously the whole thing had blown up, and we didn't, I mean, we anticipated like a little bit of like, you know, some comments and messages and stuff. But I mean, as like over the weekend, it just gathered more and more momentum and the content's been amazing. And when I say we've had like 10,000 messages, not one single one has been unkind or negative, which I think has kind of changed my perception of people, because I was like, you know, I'm a mixed race girl going on there. I think I was expecting some negative feedback, like I just was. And like not one message, like every single message has been kind and positive.
Amazing.
Yeah, which is just...
That restores my faith in humanity.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'll remember that for the rest of my life. That's, and the messages are like beyond belief of, you know, inspiring people, and it was amazing and I cried and all of this stuff. Wow, so I'm really glad that we... you know, got the opportunity to do that. And yeah, like I said, it's lifted me up from the doldrums of entrepreneurship.
Yeah. Oh, so, I mean, and you work clearly incredibly hard to, you know, these things don't just happen. You deserve it, but it just goes to show like what an impact those sorts of, and that's brave. It's brave to put yourself out there. if you had a bad day, if they ripped the products to pieces and you know, but actually you put yourself out there, and I think that says a lot. And I guess there's going to be people listening to this that think, I want to do that for my product. I've got something special that I want to share. So what's your advice for them about applying to the show? Like, any tips or points or suggestions of who should and shouldn't do it?
I think it's really designed for product-based businesses. If you've got a service business, or even if you've got a software business, even if it's a consumer-facing app, I'm not sure it's the right platform for you. Mm. If you've got a physical product, I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
I also think I wouldn't go on there if you're too early stage.
Yeah.
I think that can be really sort of dangerous. And they do. I think they do. You do better when you've got some traction behind you and you can demonstrate that you've already done some stuff. So I think if you've got a product-based business and you've already got some traction behind you, I would highly recommend it.
Nice.
It will move your business into another stratosphere.
We haven't talked about what the future holds for MyMaster. So do you mind telling us about, off the back of riding high, off the all the amazing press from Dragon's Den, what have you got in store for 2024 and beyond?
Yeah, so for us, it's about launching a couple of new products aligned with our vision of becoming the home of physical optimization. And it's really about investing in our brand and our community. And ultimately, like, we're going all the way. Like, I talk about building the Nike of physical optimization of sports recovery, and I really mean it. Like, I'm not playing. So yeah, big, big dreams.
I have a really sneaky feeling that you're going to go all the way. It's really exciting. Before we get to our wrap-up questions, I wanted to talk about wellness, because it is a topic that comes up a lot, thankfully more now than it used to in entrepreneurship. And I want to pick your brains as somebody that, you know, is clearly, you know, sport is really important to you. You're a founder, you're juggling parenthood and all that sort of stuff. How do you balance prioritizing well-being, health and well-being and fitness with being a parent, you know, running a business with massive ambitions? Like, how do you do that? Because I find it very difficult. I know a lot of people listening to this will find it very difficult, and we could benefit from your advice and wisdom on the topic.
I think it is criminal if you are balancing that many things and you have to give your energy to that many people to not put yourself first. Like, I'm not afraid to say I'm getting a babysitter because I'm going to go train for 2 hours. Mm. I think, like, you can't give the people what they need, your child, the people who work for you, everything, if you haven't taken care of yourself. And I actually think we should reframe it in our mind as like, if I'm not in a good place and I don't feel good and I'm not healthy, then what use am I to any of the other people? So it's actually, you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't make time for it, and you're doing a disservice to all the other people around you.
I think it's a really important message. And I must say, like, for me, I know when I'm at my best. I'm playing sport, which is my passion from since I was a child. And there are times in the JBM journey where I have just let that go. Yeah. It was literally about 10 years. Once I broke my leg playing rugby, stopped playing rugby, and just focused on the business. And I didn't replace it.
Yeah.
It's only 2 years ago, like 8 years on or whatever, I started playing football again. It's totally changed my life.
Right.
It's totally changed it. And I've been an amazing armchair critic of all sports.
Yeah. Here,
but I didn't enjoy the gym. I did a bit of boxing. I just found it, like, didn't replicate the thing that I love, which was team-based sports.
Right.
And sometimes you just gotta, like, you've got to sometimes remind yourself what makes you happy.
Yeah.
And I've been a happier person since, and I think a better leader, better husband.
Exactly.
And, you know, I think
it's
the case.
But it's really interesting you say there about it being team sports that you're.
That's my thing. I struggle in the gym.
Right.
I really struggle in the gym.
And I think it's for a lot of people, like, they struggle to find their thing that really motivates them. And so for you, it's probably about, like, the sport, but it's also like the camaraderie and the energy you get from other people and all of that stuff.
So true.
So I think, like, taking time to understand your thing that lifts you up is really important.
And how's your, for any founder that's like, right, I'm hearing what Lottie's saying, I'm going to put it into action. Like, what does that actually mean, like, week to week, day to day for you? Like, how do you balance these different things? Do you kind of get up early, go to the gym? Like, what's your sort of schedule for this sort of stuff?
Yeah, so I don't want to buy into the hustle culture. I know people hate it when I say this, but I do get up really early.
Me too. I'm an early bird.
I know you're not supposed to say that these days, but, like, yeah, I get up really early. Mostly train in the morning, but also, like, on Monday night, I went at the club for 2 hours, trained, had my sauna, did my ice bath, like, relaxed, all of that stuff. So yeah, for me, it's like fitting it in where you can, but also just, like, making sure you schedule it. And like I said, not being afraid to be like, right, I'm getting a babysitter, or I'm going to call so-and-so because I need that time. So I think, especially as women, we feel like we've got to be at home and we've got to be, you know, giving to other people all of the time.
Very true.
But I'm not into that.
No, fair enough. Love it, love it. Well, I hope everyone's going to listen to this and we're going to have healthy founders and ones that take their well-being and health and fitness just as seriously as putting their business. Because I think you're right. If you do those things, I think you're just going to be happier and you'll be able to go for longer. And we've said how hard you have to work to be successful. So it just makes common sense. We're sadly at our wrap-up questions, Lottie. I could talk to you for ages. So I'm sad we've only got three more left. But this is the 40-minute mental. If you could be mentored by anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Oh, I'd be mentored by Sarah Blakely, who founded Spanx.
Oh, yeah, good one. Good one.
I mean, she is phenomenal. Built like a billion-dollar business, bootstrapped it. Not only that, but she's like incredibly humble. She has incredible energy. She's a mum of four kids. I just think, and she's a big advocate for women. I have a big admiration for what she built.
Yeah. Amazing. That's a great answer. She's definitely on that list of, I really want to get her on the podcast one day.
Oh,
it'll
my
be
gosh.
Almost impossible,
can
but I'm going to try.
From outside the window?
100%. 100%. I've got this list of a few people. She's definitely on it. We've told some of our listeners that you're coming on, the Die Hard collective of my masters, and they've sent some questions for you. So, question roulette time. Can you choose one, two, or three, and we'll see what they've chosen?
Oh, three.
Three, okay. How do you balance being business partners, a couple and parents with Joe? How do you balance it all? Does it affect the relationship? How do you navigate difficulties or conflict?
There's been a lot. Okay. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah,
especially obviously because we had a young baby at the same time and everyone knows who's had kids, that is hard.
Yep.
And we've done a couple of things. Firstly, we've got really different roles in the business, and I advocate this for married or not married if you have a co-founder. This is vital. He looks after product. I do not get involved in product. Like, I'll see it and I'll be like, that's great. But I don't make decisions on that. That's up to him. I look after everything else. So I'm like, that's not your place. And having that division has been really important. Also, Joe has another career outside of the business. So he's a rugby coach and he has big dreams with that. And I think that's been really important for us because A, it's meant we can keep food on the table, you know, in the early stages of the business. And B, he's got something else driving him forward. That's been really important for us. And also just trying to, when we go out for dinner, we'll be like, we're not talking about my last
time. So that's
like,
important.
Yeah. Just really having some boundaries about when you are going to talk about it and when you're not.
That's, again, really refreshing and I think a really good way to be. And I think that's it. Sometimes it can become all consuming and there is no delineation between work and life and, you know, sometimes that can lead to even more conflict. So I think it's a really good way.
There's been conflict, by the way. I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
For
like,
sure.
It's been bad.
That's impossible not to, right?
Yeah.
When you're, you know, you have, I mean, there's so much at stake as well. There's a lot
exactly,
of pressure, right?
Yeah.
I totally get that. Final question. What is the one piece of career advice that you would like to leave our listeners with?
You should always do things that are ahead of where you are. So like always put yourself out of your comfort zone. Always do things that you believe you're not ready to do because ultimately that's how you grow. And I think a lot of women, especially, because I'm getting a lot of messages from women about wanting to start things. And I think a lot of it is because they sort of lack self-belief and they don't believe they can. And I think it should feel uncomfortable and it should feel hard.
Definitely.
That's when you make the big leaps in life and in your career.
Love that piece of advice. I've loved this conversation.
Thank you so much,
Lottie. It's been a real pleasure. Great to have you on 40 Minute Mental. And I wish you all the very best. I have no doubt this is going to be an amazing year. And I'm sure the years ahead will be similar. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. I really hope that you found it useful and inspiring. If we have left any questions unanswered, or if you have any feedback or guest recommendations for future series, then please make sure you get in touch on info@jbmc.co.uk. I often get asked by listeners how you can help us spread the word about 40 Minute Mentor. There are two simple ways you can help. Firstly, share this episode on your preferred social media platform, and LinkedIn is probably where I'm most likely to see it. And you can also leave us a review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Every share on social media and review left on the podcast platforms really helps us to get 40 Minute Mentor in front of new audiences and share the power of mentorship even further.
Thank you so much for your ongoing support, and I look forward to seeing you again next Wednesday for even more Pocket Size Mentorship.